Hello and welcome to No Helmet Required, the original Cedar Cove podcast, in which I, Auntie Karen, and my two friends, Auntie Sarah and Uncle Brian, provide a play-by-play of each and every episode of the Hallmark original dramatic series, Cedar Cove. Auntie Sarah, Uncle Brian, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name's Auntie Sarah, and my favorite Lionel Richie song is Hello.
Is it you're looking for?
That's all I know, and that's because it was on a Disney Network special on network television in the early 80s that my parents recorded for me on beta tape. And it's really special. It's got sentimental value because it was set to those, what's the name of the animal that's part animal, part sexy human?
Centaur.
Part horse, part sexy human.
Oh, yeah, centaur.
Yeah,
right?
A centaur.
Oh, yeah.
So remember the centaurs from Fantasia?
No.
Weren't there
I never saw Fantasia, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I know, I was like, wait a minute, I think there were centaurs in Fantasia.
Yeah, there were definitely. Wow, I am channeling Fantasia.
Awesome.
That program paired Hello, Is It Me You're Looking For? With the centaurs.
Ooh.
That's an creepy. Artistic choice.
Yeah.
All right. I'm Uncle Brian, and there's so many good Lionel Richie songs, but I think I really like, in the moment, I'm feeling stuck on you.
Oh. Stuck on you. I like that
That's
one, too.
That's a good one.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
I'm Auntie Karen, and originally I was going to go with Endless Love, because...
Mm-hmm.
Endless Love.
Yeah.
So good. But then just now what popped into my head was The Commodores and Easy Like Sunday Morning.
Oh, yeah.
That's
and
good.
I like that one. He's really got such a catalog.
He really does.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable.
Well, this week, we're going to walk you through our synopsis of Season 2, Episode 10, Secrets and Lies.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry, guys, but there's a G story.
No!
Is this a record?
No.
I don't know if we've ever had a G
story
before.
I don't think we've
ever
had a G story.
We've had an F, but
you're
right.
Oh, yeah, we've had an F story.
Okay, guys. I was really hoping we wouldn't have to see Ian and Cecilia and their boring-ass storyline,
but
here we are.
They are the worst.
As the opening credits begin, we see Cecilia and Justine having breakfast at Olivia's.
Why does Justine put up with her?
Why do they spend time together?
Yeah, what is the point?
What do they even have in common besides both of their lives are in a shambles?
Ugh,
I don't know.
They suck.
So I guess Cecilia stayed there last night after walking out on Ian. And you guys, guess what they're having for breakfast?
Tears?
Almost. Jimmy Dean sausage.
No!
Oh, I didn't notice. Oh.
They're both fully made up, and Cecilia is wearing another church dress and cardigan, while Justine seemed to have moved out of the boho prep school layer phase.
Aww.
She's wearing a clingy salmon t-shirt and mint green cardi.
Weird.
And her boobs look way bigger than usual, so whatever she's doing, I hope she's happy with it.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that
No. She's
looking more fully endowed on top?
Well,
all right.
She's built like a schoolboy.
But so. No, but she's got like the boobs are sort of, like, barely contained in the... I don't know. Something's going on. Maybe it's just a really good bra.
It must be a really good bra.
Yeah, really different bra.
And that clingy salmon top. Those clingy tops have a way of...
Yeah, accentuating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways. I don't know. But anyway, Cecilia. If I left my husband and stayed over at my girlfriend's house, the next morning I would not be fully dressed and made up like this.
No.
Like, I don't understand, like, don't people roll into the common area in PJs anymore? Isn't that, like, how you...
I mean, maybe it's a house rule at Olivia's house.
Oh, but this is just how Olivia is.
Yeah.
When you get
up... No PJs in the living room, girls. Well,
no,
she doesn't wear that in her own living room, right?
I don't think we've ever seen Olivia...
She wears dresses to lay on the couch.
Yeah.
Bandage dresses.
Yeah. Yeah. No breakfast before lipstick.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's her.
It could be. Anyway, also, neither of them appear to have jobs, so why are they dressed like JCPenney mannequins?
It's true.
If I didn't have a job, like when I don't have to go to an appointment with a client or go teach in a classroom,
yeah,
it's like yoga pants, t-shirt, flannel shirt. I mean, I guess I'm going to brunch with a girlfriend. Yeah, I'll put on some jewelry, but like, like walking around your house?
No. Maybe another house rule.
Another house rule. Dress like
you have a job.
Dress like the job you don't have.
Dress like the job you don't have, girls.
Oh yeah. My God. So Cecilia says she didn't sleep, and Justine responds by asking if she thinks Ian slept.
Oh my God, who cares?
Yeah, not very super empathetic.
Yeah.
Cecilia says they need to get used to sleeping apart.
Well.
Yeah. No one cares. Just get a divorce.
Yeah. Please.
Later, Cecilia is walking into their improbably spacious and well-appointed house to find Ian staring out of the window.
Uh-oh. Mm.
He's glad she stopped by because...
Stopped by her own home.
Guess what? He's actually shipping out today and not 2 weeks from now.
Oh.
He says he got his deployment moved up, which is not how this works.
No.
As her eyes fill with tears, he says that life is too short to keep living like this.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I agree.
Yeah.
For
all of us. Have mercy on every single person involved here. He loves her, but one of them just needs to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that they need to split up. He never comes out and says what they should say. As her face crumples up further, he says he knows it's the right decision because she's not even asking him to stay and won't even say that she loves him back.
It's true.
Oh my God. These people suck.
Then he wanders off, and she stands there silently leaking tears. All right, cut to the Navy base, and we see Ian in his service khakis, which, by the way, are reserved for commissioned officers, or E7 and up, so which is kind of high for someone as young as Ian.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like, how old is he supposed to be? Mm. I mean, so Justine...
15, I don't
know. Like, Justine's... We figured supposed to be like 28, maybe.
So Ian's probably around there, right?
Yeah, or like a slightly older. Yeah. Anyways, anyway, it's a big deal with tons of service people in khakis and camo loading baggage onto a blue bus that says U.S. Navy on the side. Ian is scouting the horizon, maybe waiting for Cecilia to come and say goodbye.
Why?
I don't know. She does show up. Crying, saying she's sorry, she loves him, she hopes he stays safe and comes home to Cedar Cove where they'll work it out. She just knows they will. She says she loves him like a million times and he looks skeptical.
In the Sims simulation of their lives.
Yeah.
This is highly improbable.
Uh-huh.
It's so ridiculous.
Then she's sobbing and kissing him. And he pushes her back and says... This is the end.
Oh
I want a divorce.
Yes.
Good for you guys.
And then he says, sorry. He says, Olivia's not going to change my mind this time.
Oh.
Oh, snap.
Maybe he can sue her.
Then he says, we don't belong together. Goodbye.
Yes.
He can serve her with divorce papers, and he can serve Olivia with a lawsuit. Saying,
yeah.
How dare you
make me marry her again?
My life.
Yeah. He gets on the bus, and maybe we never see him again? Maybe, if we're good?
If we're so lucky, yeah.
In the final scene, though, it's clear that this is not the end, because Cecilia is in her bathroom, mournfully unwrapping a pregnancy test kit.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. That's it.
That's awful.
I know.
That is the worst.
All right.
What torture is this? Who came up with this plot line?
I don't know.
Some jerk.
Yes.
Well, the thing about Ian and Cecilia to me is that I feel like we might care if there was more connection to the previous story because we only saw them for one episode in season one, and that was the baby died, they were going to get a divorce, Olivia made them reconsider. And all in one episode, there was some depth to their relationship. There was, like, Ian expressed all this mourning about not being able to be there and life at sea. And
I was stuck in the submarine. I couldn't cry.
Yeah. It was, like, the tragedy of masculinity.
There was all of
that stuff. Uncle Brian pointed that out astutely.
Way back.
But none of that, there's no richness to these characters because, like, the writers are not drawing on that at all. Like, these two people act like they barely know each other.
One's an entirely new actress.
Yeah.
Well, there's that.
And she's not super good
no.
in this role.
No. She was good in other things, though. I thought she was fine in the Garage Sale Mystery as the bass player that got...
That died.
She played bass?
Yeah.
She did.
She died?
She was a bass player in a Christian rock band.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they didn't say it was a Christian rock band, but it was. It totally was. Yeah. And she wasn't bad in that role.
Cool.
No.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anyway, F story. All right. Don't get excited. It's not that kind of F story. Oh. Eric is on the dock waiting for the water taxi when we see Shelly on it holding Adele Dead Jordan in her arms.
No! Adele Dead Jordan.
Shelly looks radiant, as usual, and he gets that goofy, stupid, sideways grin upon seeing them. We can all picture it, right, guys? The adult contemporary music swells, and we see a montage of them greeting each other and him wearing the baby in a baby Bjorn. New parents are grinning at each other, strolling along the marina. Oh. They stop by the Chronicle to see Jackpaw Gramps Griffith. And Jackpaw. And Jack is overjoyed to see Shelly and Adele. It's all hugs and baby talk. And Dylan Neal, I have to say, is pretty adorable in this role. Yeah. Like, when he's around the baby, like, you can tell that he loves babies. He's like, he's adorable.
You know what else he loves?
What?
This podcast.
Oh!
He's a friend of our show. Friend of the podcast.
He said that our podcast was pretty cute.
He did.
Yeah.
He's pretty cute.
I know. I'm blushing now. We love you, Dylan Neal. Hashtag bring back Cedar Cove.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right. But anyway, he offers to watch the baby so that Eric and Shelly can have some alone time.
No,
but Eric
needs alone time.
Hey, yeah. There's the F story.
Yeah. Eric declines, saying, "I want both my girls with me."
Ew, he's so gross.
Ew.
Barf.
He's
I know.
Not allowed to say stuff like that.
Ew.
Just barf, barf,
just
barf, barf.
Explode him.
I know.
Ugh.
Now
just
Eric,
hold on.
Eric and Shelly are at the captain's galley, where they run into. Guess who?
Oh, I wonder.
Warren Saget and his new girlfriend, Rebecca.
Nice.
The woman Eric was boning up until about a minute ago. He warmly introduces everyone, leaving out the part about boning Rebecca. Rebecca plays it cool, but in a moment of truth, she stares at Adele Dead Jordan like she wants to murder her.
Oh my God, she's a baby. She's like, she's a half-dead ghost baby, okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's harmless.
Yeah. Anyway, Eric and Shelly start to slide away when Warren, like a huge dick, insists that they join him and Rebecca for lunch.
God,
and
he's the worst.
Everyone's declining, and he's like insisting.
It's a
like,
power play.
It's a power play, totally.
He's like, "I'm gonna make you eat lunch with me."
Yeah,
I'm gonna make you eat poop with me. That's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
Then through the awkwardness, we see that Warren may be catching on to the fact that Eric and Rebecca know each other.
Yeah.
In the biblical sense. The next scene opens in Warren's office, and once again, for a split second, I think the magazine cover on the wall says
fecal
arts.
Sure does.
Yeah. He's on the phone, desperately dealing with someone about the, quote, guys back east landing in federal custody.
Uh-oh.
And then he beckons Eric in to start a convo about Rebecca. And he says, "How does a guy like you get a girl like Rebecca? I mean, she's a Maserati. And you're a two-door coupe? At best?"
Oh, my God.
I loved when he said "at best." It was so funny. And he looked at him for confirmation, like...
Yeah, like, you know
you're... Yeah, you're
pretty crappy, right?
Yeah, you know you're nowhere near her level. Eric looks uncomfortable, as you would. And Warren says, "You can't handle her." But I did underestimate you. I won't do that again. Then he walks out, leaving Eric sitting there. And then cut to Adele... Oh, sorry, not Adele. Cut to Shelly...
Ah.
Trying to take a nap in Eric's bed and finding a silky camisole in the sheets.
Ew, what is wrong with him?
Yeah.
Ew, don't touch that.
Yeah.
Don't touch it.
Honestly, guys, it should have been a thong, but this is the Hallmark Channel.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So gross.
It should have been a thong, but
you know.
Do you
think it was Eric's?
Well, that does not occur to her.
No, it does not.
No.
Oh, my God.
Then Shelly is wheeling Adele Dead Jordan's stroller into Eric's office at Warren Saget Development.
Don't do that.
He looks happy to see her. He says he didn't realize how much he missed her until he saw her on the ferry. He has a picture of her and the baby on his desk. They both comment on how much they like that picture. And you can tell she's struggling over whether to bring up the silky camisole she found in the bed. He goes on saying how hard it is being away from her. Then she says, "Yeah, It can be rough, especially at night. And she throws the camisole on his desk.
Ew!
And wheels herself and dead Jordan right out the door.
Lady, you don't touch that. You don't know where that's been.
It was just a camisole.
A silky one.
But it wasn't like it was, you know... Ew. It wasn't a garment that would touch nether regions.
Well, until somebody uses it.
Sarah! Oh my god!
That's immediately where my brain went. You don't touch weird things that you find in beds.
That's true. We don't know what Eric was doing with it.
We don't! He's a googly-eyed creep!
This podcast
took a turn.
Like, sorry. Really earned its mature rating right now. Okay.
Alright, so
that's what we need you for.
What does googly-eyed creep do?
Okay, so then there's a pretty comical scene of her strolling down Main Street and Eric chasing after her and begging for a chance to explain. Oh, and she's like, it's Rebecca, isn't it? Like, she caught on to their awkwardness a bunch.
She's a smart woman.
And he's like, well, yeah, but not anymore. She's with Warren now, and I never stopped loving you. I just got lonely and slipped. It won't happen again, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, stop, Eric. Why? Just stop. Shut up.
They broke up.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Just did.
I know. And then he starts talking about how much he, quote, needs this. I guess meaning her and the baby.
I don't know.
And then she takes a deep breath and says she has met someone too.
Yeah.
Good for her.
But we don't know the extent of it because the scene is over and they don't. And that's it for this plot.
It's probably Warren.
In this episode.
Or Moon.
No.
Don't give me
a... just gave it a weird mature rating.
I know. Now I have a stomach ache. That's okay. Now we have the E story. Okay, ready?
Oh, God, I can't believe we're only at the E story.
Yeah, the show opens with Cliff and Grace walking around the ranch.
Okay.
She says she understands why he might be angry. If you remember in the last episode, Cliff popped in at Grace's house to find Silver Fox polygamous cult leader Will Jeffers making himself at home in her living room.
Yes.
Okay, he says he's not mad. Man, this guy is long-suffering.
He is so... He's a martyr. He's a saint.
He's a saint.
He's a saint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe kind of a martyr.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also a saint.
He says he was super pissed, but then he took his horse Duke out for a ride, and now he's fine. But he wants some honesty. Does Will have anything to do with her wanting to slow things down?
Mm-hmm.
No, she lies. Do you guys believe her?
No.
Liar.
It was all about Will, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. She says she just wants to catch her breath. She leans in for a kiss, but is then distracted by Alex hosing down the cement. Cliff explains that Alex is short for Alexandra, in case everyone watching the show couldn't have already surmised this. He teases Grace about how much Alex likes the cabin and is even thinking about nailing cowboy boots to the wall.
Oh, I bet she is.
Yeah, she playfully shoves him, and we see that all is well between these two lovebirds.
Really?
For except a minute and a half.
Is it? Then we see Grace in Olivia's chambers asking for an emergency lunch.
Uh-oh.
She needs to talk about Alex.
Short for Alexandra.
Yeah, just in case that still wasn't clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just... repeat
Let's
that.
Let's remind you every so often. Yeah,
right. She says, thanks to me, he's out there all alone with a woman who makes flannel sexy.
Well.
Yeah.
She does.
Yeah.
She kind of does.
She really does.
She's pretty hot.
She regrets... Yeah, she's beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? She regrets asking him for space and reflects that if she's not careful, she's going to end up with a lot more space than she wants.
Well, yeah, I've been saying that for most of a season now.
Yeah. And Olivia's like, well then, just break your own rule. Don't give him any space. And then Grace acts like Olivia is the smartest person in the world, which I guess has been their dynamic since they were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grace thinks Olivia is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and Olivia enjoys telling her what to do.
God.
That's their entire friendship, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Later the same day, because I don't, like, they're all wearing the same outfits,
it's though. It's always the same day.
It's always the same day in Cedar Cove. We see Grace creeping up on Alex as she's training a horse by walking it in circles and saying, easy, and whoa.
She's wearing Daisy Dukes.
Yeah.
No!
She looks amazing.
Daisy
she's
Dukes.
Wearing cowgirl boots, cutoffs.
Working with horses?
And she does.
Easy pastel pink flannel tied in a knot at her belly.
Oh, I'm so sure.
Yeah. She looks amazing. They greet each other warmly, except that when Grace offers her a homemade cookie, Alex declines, saying she's trying to lose 5 pounds.
That made me angry.
That made me angry, too. I was like, I liked you until you said that, yeah. And now no, what, like what are you doing? Yeah. What is the show doing? What is the Hallmark Channel doing?
Yeah. Just say no gross. Thank you.
Just say no thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Gross. Anyway, then she takes off her shirt to reveal a little white A-line tank, in which she also looks extra amazing.
I think she'd look better if she lost 5 pounds.
Uncle Brian. He's kidding, dear listeners. No, I'm really being kidding. Ironic.
Yes, sorry. If that wasn't clear. Ridiculous! She looks fantastic!
Yeah, she's really gorgeous. She's like, I don't know, her skin. Like, she just looks, yeah. I don't even know.
Airbrushed.
Yeah.
Yeah. She looks like she just drinks green smoothies all the time and does yoga.
A walking, talking airbrush.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's lovely. And then, so Grace is staring at her, and she's not sure if she's jealous or just actually hot for her.
I wanted this to be homoerotic.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
I mean, and she's I want staring
Alex
at her
to be a lesbian.
A lot.
Yeah.
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 That would be way better if Alex were a lesbian, for sure.
She should have been.
Yeah. Yeah, she should have been.
On a different network, she would have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, then Grace is macking on cookies by her car, waiting for Cliff, and watching Alex hose down horses. Like, she's still just, like, over there eating cookies, watching her.
That sounds like so much fun!
And Cliff
Grace
finally...
Grace understands what's erotic.
Yeah.
At least in my life. I'm gonna eat cookies while I watch someone hot.
Yeah, that's so good.
Okay, awesome. Then Cliff finally shows up and she hands him an almost empty bag saying she made him cookies but then ate them. Don't judge.
Don't judge. I guess oogling your ranch hand all afternoon.
Is something wrong, he wonders. She gestures at Alex and he's like, what? And then she says, how would you like it if I hired a Chippendale dancer at the library?
Awesome!
He jokes with her about it and reassures her that she's the only knockout he's thinking about. Then she tries to feed him the last cookie, and he says, no, that's okay. I think you need it more than I do. Then...
What does that mean?
That she's all stressed out about Alex.
Oh, weird.
Then he's like, you know, for slowing things down, you sure are around here quite a lot. Which I thought was a good comment. I like Cliff. He keeps it real.
Yeah. He does.
There's no games.
No.
There's no...
Everything's up front.
Yeah.
Yep, straightforward.
And he's patient.
So patient. My
yeah.
God.
Such a gentle horse handler.
Yeah.
As well.
Right.
Very gentle.
Oh, that's... Yeah. Then they spark and he walks away. He says he wants less space, not more. Alex is watching them at a distance, looking very worried, as Grace shoves the last cookie in her mouth. I felt like this Chippendale dancer thing, this comment that Grace makes, is really unfair. Because yeah, Alex is actually a very skilled, competent, trained horse person.
Yeah.
Who Cliff has known for a long time and trusts.
Yeah.
And needs a place. Like, it really worked out. His needs, her needs.
Yeah.
It's not like he just hired some hot girl for no reason.
If there was a... Yeah, if there was an applicant for the library who had a master's in library science, who also sometimes was an exotic dancer, like, was a dancer
at,
like, bachelorette parties or something.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's the only way that makes sense.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Cliff would have to be like, well, he is educated and qualified.
He does have a master's in library science.
Yeah. And the library doesn't pay all that much. So, you know, if you have other skills that are profitable.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. He has to dance to support his baby after his wife died at an early age.
Yes.
That is another Hallmark movie, guys.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's a good one.
Dancing for Love. Okay. Part of Spring Fling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
Hallmark Channel.
Please.
Okay, so later Alex is carrying groceries down Main Street to her car when she runs into Grace. She says they need to talk, but then the scene ends, so, you know.
Oh, no, because we can never finish a conversation in a scene.
But then later they're walking, and Alex confides that she's afraid Grace is going to get her fired. She says it's happened before, and she wants her to know she is not out to get Cliff. She likes him as a boss, and she really needs this job.
Here would have been the great place to say she's a lesbian.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then Grace says... Wait, sorry, I have to look at my notes here. Oh, Grace admits that she's jealous and that they are taking things slowly and doesn't like the idea of Alex being around in the meantime. Alex offers to leave because she doesn't want to cause problems.
Alex, don't do that.
I know, come on. And then Grace says, no, 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 you seem sweet and really good at what you do. Alex says, well, if there's ever anything she can do to make Grace more comfortable at the ranch, she'll do it. And then Grace suggests longer shorts.
Wah, wah.
Barf.
She could walk around with, like, a horrible grimace and, like, dragging one leg behind her.
Or, I don't, I mean...
Or, like, she could get, like, plastic surgery to make herself look terrible.
It's, I mean, she can't help what she looks like. I don't get this at all. Wear longer shorts, how is that going to change anything?
She could put on a burqa, how about that?
I mean, right? Like, this is just so sexist and weird.
It is, it's horrible.
It's horrible. And also, like... She's on a budget. She's supposed to go buy new clothes. And also, it's hot. And also, like, I don't know. It's so dumb.
It's a little too Handmaid's Tale for me.
Yeah.
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 I agree. And also, I just feel... I feel like Grace would be a little more socially conscious.
Oh, Grace can be terrible character, sometimes, right?
She's sometimes terrible, but she then can be sometimes...
very conservatively weird sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, she's a librarian. I don't... She's
very easily threatened, unfortunately.
Oh. Yeah. You know what? It's her six. It's her It's her being threatened.
Yeah.
Then she goes into protocol.
Yeah.
Sixes are, like, scanning the horizon for danger, and then looking for things like laws and rules to make things better. Sorry, guys. This is a reference to the Enneagram, which we did in mid... season one, when we Enneagram personality typed all the characters,
you can
and it
go
gave
back
us.
And find that episode.
Was that episode 4 that we did?
It was in between the bachelor party and all the shit that came after the bachelor party. So it's like, it's between like 8 and 9 or 7 and 8.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
It was late.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a little over halfway through, I think.
But that's what happened. That's also what we were talking about whenever we talk about how Justine is a 2.
Yeah.
Because we've said that. We don't mean on the 1 to 10 hotness scale.
No.
Please do not think we are doing that.
Yeah, we would never do that.
Because we're not doing that. No. We're not rating women based on their appearance.
No.
No. No. Good God. Yeah.
That's preposterous. So, thank you, Uncle Brian. I feel like that's very, very helpful.
Yes.
All right, D story. So, for the last 3 episodes, Peggy has been receiving offerings from a mysterious flower sender and note writer.
Oh,
my God.
And last episode, she hired Roy Sideburn's PI to investigate. And so here we open on the front porch of the Time and Tide. Again, why are we not meeting in Roy's perfectly fine, fully furnished office?
Yes.
I don't know. But he confirms her fear that the man in question is one Colin McFadden.
Uh-oh, this guy.
Okay, she says... Thanks. Then he says he's got the Portland police keeping an eye on him.
Uh-oh!
Which, can PIs do that? Can they call a police department and say, keep an eye on this guy? Is that even legal?
Maybe he's
I'm sure it's not legal.
I'm sure it's not legal.
I'm sure he's got some friend.
Oh, he's got some friend down there?
Yeah.
He's got connections.
Yeah. Roy Sideburns.
And then he says if he knew the whole story, he could do more. And she says dramatically... No one can know.
Oh, my God.
As he drives away, she looks through the folder he's given her, and we see pictures of a shady-looking man wandering around Cedar Cove. And now we actually see that shady guy wandering around Cedar Cove in the flesh!
It's almost as if those pictures were there to show us what he looks like.
So that we can recognize him when we see him on the street. You know who he runs into on Main Street?
Who?
Bob Belden.
Uh-oh!
His former...
Friend? Or...
What's the opposite? When you're a sponsor for someone...
Sponsee.
Yeah.
Sponsored.
The sponsored?
Yeah, but do we know that for sure?
I think so.
Okay. Oh, really? Maybe I missed something. Anyway, but here's the odd thing. Bob is really happy to see him. Big smile breaks out across his face, and he comes toward him. They laugh. They embrace.
Uh-oh.
And to show how clueless Bob is, he says, wait till Peggy finds out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, Bob. Cut to the time and tide. While Peggy struggles to bring in bags of groceries, Bob is not moved to help her.
Wow. Jesus, Bob.
He just says, you got more flowers, no card. Bob says he's going to have Roy Sideburn's PI look into it. And Peggy rejects the idea a little too quickly. Finally, Bob agrees to go get the rest of the groceries. Later that night, Peggy and Bob are laughing jovially in the kitchen while Peggy is chopping greens for a salad. Bob says, oh, I forgot to tell you. Guess who's moving back to Cedar Cove? Colin McFadden. She stiffens and drops the salad bowl on the floor, and it makes a big clatter.
Uh-oh.
Bob's like, geez, what? Are you okay? And she just stands there like a wax figure.
Mm.
That's it.
Mm.
That's a D story. We definitely are to believe that Colin McFadden is an old friend of Bob's.
Yes.
And Bob thinks that he's also an old friend of Peggy's.
Right.
He's like completely clueless and out of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Bob
is. Yeah, yeah. Bob is. Totally. And that's it for the D story.
All
right. C story. Okay. The C story opens with Justine and Luke sitting in her little red car out in front of the Time and Tide. She's dropping him off after their day at the beach. You guys remember their day at the beach with that, like, ill-fated cookout?
Yes, the corn.
The corn that, like, didn't quite get grilled and then just got put into Tupperware and they maybe didn't eat it. Super weird.
Ian and Cecilia.
Oh, yeah.
Ian's over there, like, trying to drown Cecilia.
I hate you.
Why?
Very rocky.
You stay under.
Just seems like halfway down the beach on a rock journaling.
Yes, right, exactly.
Lala, dear diary, that is such a great alley. My best friends who love each other, and with my favorite meal, corn in a Tupperware, prepared by a werewolf. Werewolf corn in Tupperware. My favorite beachside snack. I wish every day could be like today.
Okay.
That was a good afternoon.
Yeah. So if you guys remember, they almost kissed, but then she wandered off saying, I can't.
I can't do this.
Anyway, so now they're in the car. They have an awkward goodbye in which he's trying to connect and be vulnerable, and she is armored up hard.
Goodbye.
He's wearing a blue crew neck, and I think he looks pretty cute in it.
I may not have been paying 100% of attention during this scene.
Yeah.
But there was a split second where maybe even longer than a split second, where I looked at them in the car and I thought, she's got some other guy in the car with her now? Because he didn't even look like the old Luke. Like, he's hot now.
Oh, he's hot now.
Yeah.
He's
right. I thought he was a totally different guy.
Something happened.
Yeah.
Is it his hair?
I think he has a fresh haircut. He's shaving now. There's no more,
he's
like,
not
scraggly
so
stuff.
He's a little.
Well, he's not drinking.
Lost a little weight, yeah.
He's dressing a little bit sharper, maybe? Or I'm not sure what's happening here. But he's, like, all of a sudden kind of hot, right?
His PTSD has been cured.
Right. Yeah, thanks to 7 weeks in therapy.
Well, he's getting the Cedar Cove treatment, sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's super hot now. I was like, oh, yeah.
Remember,
in the car with him.
I kept telling you guys that she was going to get a hotter boyfriend, and then at first we were all like, what? There's something there. Anyway, she drives off, her jaw set, and he watches her, and in my notes it says, with his fresh haircut, and I'm thinking it's a good look.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Later, Justine is on the deck with her large new boobs and talking apparently to Seth 2 on the phone.
Why?
She's crying.
I have some new boobs. I just don't understand why I'm so sad. I have new boobs.
It's larger.
And you know what? They get in my way.
She's crying and saying she wants to Skype later so she can see his face.
Why?
I want to show that to you.
Oh, God.
I want to see your cheese face.
There's a knock at the door, and guess who it is? It's Luke in a very tight shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. She opens the door and wordlessly lets him in, then collapses on the floor and says she's not okay when he asks her if she's okay.
I'm not okay, guys.
She says she's confused. He says, I don't think you're confused. I think you feel guilty.
Yeah.
Then she gets all self-loathing and asks the question we're all thinking about her, which is, why would you want me anyway?
Yeah, why would anyone?
And then she says,
what a person who has to ask that question.
I know. Yeah. Then she says she's a bad girlfriend. He says, don't deny your feelings. Let's deal with this head on. They say more things to each other that don't make sense. And then she gets her purse and leaves. So she,
what? She leaves her own house?
Yeah, she leaves her mom's house and leaves him there. And we never even establish why he came over in the first place.
I gotta go.
Yeah. Then Justina's headed to her mom's chambers. She's not okay. She needs to talk. But she's concerned Olivia will judge her.
Well, of course she will.
Yeah. Why would she think that?
That's her job.
Yeah. She
24/7.
She confides that she wanted to kiss Luke and that he did kiss her once before, but she slapped him.
But it's me I really wanted to slap.
Oh my God.
That's totally doable, Justine.
Do you just want to, like, take her arm and be like, Justine, why are you hitting yourself? Yeah. Justine, why are you hitting her yourself?
Jesus.
And then she says she has a boyfriend she loves.
No, you don't.
Who isn't even paid to be on the show anymore.
It doesn't exist.
Olivia wants to know if she wants to be with Luke. Yes, she says,
when I'm with him, could I have the same feelings for two very different men?
Oh my God.
Yes, says Olivia, but you need to make a choice.
Oh, the morality play of this program.
I know. And then how do you do it, Justine wants to know. How do you make hard decisions day after day? Olivia says, facts, arguments, making the best decision you can, and trusting yourself.
Is her daughter regressing?
Like, yeah.
Is her mind... Is this like a reverse Benjamin Buttons thing? Where like
she's just getting like more and more of a child?
Faculties are just like diminishing?
I don't know. Then they twinkle at each other and hug.
Oh my God.
Then cut to Justine sitting on a public bench journaling.
Dear diary, this is my favorite thing to do in public now. Why can't I slap myself?
In the background, it's what's his face trying to drown Cecilia and like a fountain. That always has to happen while she's doing
dinner
in the background. In another body of water of some kind.
Why? What? You! John!
Alright. Okay.
Damn.
All right. So, you guys, Justine's on the public bench journaling while there's a murder happening in the background. Just kidding, dear reader, dear listener. There's no murder happening in the background. What is in the background is Luke. He comes walking up purposefully. Again, like he's in a video game. Have you guys noticed his walk?
Yes.
He's like Teen Wolf on a mission in the video game Paperboy.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, exactly. And says, stop running away from me. We need to talk.
Oh my God. He's terrified.
Says the werewolf. Yeah.
She puts her journal in her purse and makes to leave.
I followed your scent all the way here.
His nose twitches. She keeps saying, leave me alone. He keeps saying, let's just get this out. She's back off, go away. Then he grabs her hand and kisses her.
What?
And she drops her purse and returns the kiss.
Oh.
I don't like the way that this show sets up.
That's not a good lesson on consent.
It really isn't.
Yeah, it's not. And boundaries, it's not.
All of that was leading up to me macing someone.
Yes. Yeah,
totally.
Mace him.
Yeah. Or just like, knee to the balls.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty basic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, B story. At Moon's, this is, I think, the first time that I have separated Jack and Olivia's different stories.
Oh, how about that?
Oh. Yeah, so I've got Olivia in the B story, and then we'll catch up with Jack in the A story.
Oh, okay.
So B story. At Moon's, a man in a conservative gray suit is waiting for Olivia. And then she flounces in wearing a citrine blouse and chartreuse pencil skirt.
Oh my god, what a getup.
Yeah, apparently he owes her gambling money from a poker game.
What the shit?
And they are super flirty about it.
What the shit?
Yeah, he hands over some 20s and she pockets them like she wants to do the wild thing with him.
What?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a secret life.
What the hell
secret
is going on?
Poker game.
Also,
life?
Is this an acting choice or a directing choice? Like, I'm totally lost. Like, who is Olivia right now? I don't even know.
Yeah.
She plays poker with this guy. Like, when did that ever happen? And then why didn't he just pay up that night?
Right.
And then they have to meet at Moon's, and she's like, she takes the 20s and, like, stuffs them. I mean, she doesn't put them in her bra, but she might as well. And then she wiggles her eyebrows up and down like Groucho Marx. And says she needs a favor.
I need a favor.
Yeah. Yeah, with the eyebrows going up and down. She confides that Rebecca Jennings Esquire, the new ADA, lied on her resume.
Uh-oh.
Do you guys remember last time she figured out that Rebecca didn't go to Yale?
She did the right thing.
And then the favor... Well, no.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're right.
Because then the favor is that she wants to, quote, handle it for him.
No.
And apparently... Then he's like, well, she works for me, so this is...
Oh, so
he's,
the guy in the
he's like
the
DA.
He's
the DA.
Yeah.
So she plays poker with the DA.
And probably the chief of police, right?
Probably.
And the mayor.
Yeah, and the mayor. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The whole cabal.
Yeah.
The whole cabal. Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Because they're all in cahoots, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's no
checks and balances.
No.
In Cedar Cove.
It doesn't make any sense.
Oligarchy. So anyway... she's like, okay, so Rebecca lied, and, like, apparently this is, like, his job, he needs to deal with it.
Yeah.
But she's like, but just let me deal with it.
Oh my god, what? And he's like, sure thing, Olivia, no
wait,
problem.
And then
that sounds perfect.
She literally puts her knuckles under her chin and twinkles at him like she's getting her picture taken at Sears. And that's the end of the scene, and it's a big mystery, and no one knows what her evil plan is.
What the shit?
Yeah.
It's probably not very good.
Then cut to Rebecca Jennings Esquire coming into Olivia's chamber saying, you rang.
Oh, boy.
And she's wearing a terrible pantsuit. It's black with two large, shiny, round black buttons and zipper-trimmed pockets, and it looks cheap and boxy and weird.
Ew.
Anyway, I was just wondering, why do judges have chambers when everyone else has an office?
I don't know.
I'm going to start calling my office my chambers.
You should, actually.
And my office hours... Chambers visits.
Oh, whoa! Chamber visits. Oh.
Okay, kids. You're going to have a...
That's good.
You're required to have 2 chamber visits this quarter. What do you guys think?
I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
You should do it.
I'll see you in my chambers.
Yep.
It'll be deranged. Yep. You should definitely do it.
I think we should all do it.
That's insane.
That's a new thing.
It's insane.
I love
Hello,
it.
Hello, I'm insane. I'll see you in my chambers.
Yeah. I'm going to put a sign on the door.
Chamber. The chambers are open.
The chambers of Auntie Karen.
Yeah.
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 Why not?
Good.
Okay, so Rebecca's all... Okay, wait, I already said that. Anyway. Oh, so Rebecca's all, you rang, and then Olivia swings around in her chair, crosses her legs, and takes off her glasses.
Excuse me?
Yeah. You can tell this is the most fun Andy McDowell has had in 2 years. Olivia says... I know you didn't go to Yale. You're caught. Rebecca responds with, says you. To which Olivia responds it with, says the facts.
Oh,
and then Rebecca...
They're both lawyers. Well, at least one of them's a lawyer.
Yeah.
The other's pretending to be.
She gets all belligerent, and Olivia's like, drop the attitude. And then Rebecca says, this isn't an attitude. This is me, and unlike most people, I'm not afraid of you, and then storms out.
So
it's like
no one said anything.
So nothing was established about whether she lied or not. No.
Good plan, Olivia.
Yeah.
Why have you handled it yourself?
Right, awesome.
This was
also
stupid.
This is easy enough to prove. Like, if she did lie, wouldn't she honestly be terrified that Olivia found out? And if she didn't lie, wouldn't she just be like, you're crazy and I can prove I went there? Like this whole thing doesn't make any sense.
No.
This is like prolonging some dumbass thing.
Yeah. Alright. So then Olivia's walking with the suit guy. But this, okay, so this is supposedly Rebecca's boss, but I think this is a different boss from the time they went to Veterans Court.
Yeah, this it's is not a the sexier same, one,
same
right?
Tony,
this
right?
Is
this guy's a little hotter.
DA sexy.
Yeah.
DA sexy.
DA sexy. Anyway, she says that she thought if she confronted Rebecca, then she would drop her attitude. Then he
what?
Says.
What? Yeah. In what world?
Like, that's the most important thing. Here,
yeah.
Other than that, right. She lied on her resume.
She doesn't know anything about humans.
Unfortunately, for Olivia, I think it is right.
For her, that's the most
probably
important.
Probably
thing.
Is. Yeah.
Anyway, then he says that Rebecca called him and resigned. So Olivia looks disappointed, and Tony says, "What is it with you? You can't save everyone."
What is
right?
this?
Because that's what this was about.
I want to throw myself off of a cliff. This
yeah.
is ridiculous.
Olivia says all that bluster is covering something. And
who
she is really an amazing attorney.
Was she?
I don't know.
She just wants to help.
Oh, I'm so fucking sure.
Yeah. Turns out Rebecca did go to law school, just not Yale, and got straight A's.
At
the unnamed
lesser institution.
Yeah.
Although I think she said... Doesn't Olivia say something like, the college she went to, she got straight A's at, or
mm-hmm.
something? And it's like, does someone who's writing this understand that law school is not the same as college?
It's not.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah it's not the same.
No.
And also, if she lied about going to Yale, doesn't that sort of discredit everything? Like...
Yeah, how
maybe,
did she
maybe
find
she,
out where she went? How did she find out
her transcripts? How did she find out where she
yeah.
went? How did she look at her transcripts? And
yeah.
also, if she did get straight A's, like, there's no reason to believe she didn't plagiarize.
Right. Well, she must have...
I mean,
yeah,
she's shown
cheated.
Herself to be
yeah.
untrustworthy. So stupid.
This is stupid.
Yeah, it's really stupid.
Yeah.
I died.
Yeah.
I'm dead.
All right.
I'm done.
Anyway.
With it.
We finally find out the guy's name is Tony, and he's willing to give her a second chance. Why?
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 Because he wants...
What's he
want? Into Olivia.
He's into Olivia.
It's a poker thing.
Yeah. Then they compliment each other on their moral goodness, and that's that.
You're so good. No, you're so good.
Oh, no, you're so
let's
good.
Let's play poker.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's, poker.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we see Rebecca and Olivia outside the courthouse. Rebecca says she's leaving town, and Olivia starts talking about how Rebecca is a good poker player and how inside she's really scared. Rebecca rolls her eyes, because wouldn't anyone in
yes.
this situation?
Yes.
Then she complains that Olivia got her fired, which, no.
But
when you lie on your resume, you
yeah.
get fired also. Ugh. I have in my notes, OMG, what a twat. Sorry. Then Olivia says she wants to help her, and she knows
Why?
Where to find her.
No one knows.
Oh, God, Olivia, just give it up and let it go. But she won't. Lastly, Olivia is in her office packing up for the day when Rebecca skulks in looking downtrodden. Olivia surmises that she wants to stay in Cedar Cove. She asks if Yale was the only lie, and Rebecca says yes.
Liar.
Olivia tells her to report her misdeed, write a letter of apology, and resubmit her real resume to the DA's office. She'll be able to continue, but on indefinite probation. Mm-hmm. Olivia reveals that Rebecca will be able to keep her job, but only because a well-respected judge in the community, me, has vouched that this is a one-time mistake and not a pattern of character.
Except...
It is.
It's sort of a pattern, right?
Yeah. Rebecca looks properly ashamed. And then Olivia says, "Why did you lie?" Rebecca says, "I felt I had to." And then asked Olivia why she helped her. Olivia replies, "I felt I had to."
Oh, my God.
Crooked smile, knowing gaze, TM.
Oh, my God.
She strolls out feeling pretty good about herself. And that's it. That's a B story.
I hated that.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
The whole thing was so horrible
so
and dumb.
Horrible.
I would just rather Rebecca be sort of a bitchy, badass lawyer and
yeah.
add that little spice to Cedar Cove without this whole lying on the resume and Olivia's
yeah.
power play
yeah.
and all of this BS. I didn't even mind her hooking up with Eric and Warren and all of that.
No,
that was kind of fun.
She's
that's kind of fun.
Chaos. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
But, okay. All right. A story. We got this. We got this, guys.
Yes. Oh, we're, yeah.
We see Jack in his very old-fashioned wire-rimmed glasses hemming and hawing over his laptop. Olivia saunters in saying, "You're up early." Meanwhile, she's dressed in espadrilles and a drapey purple tank top over white linen pants, full makeup, hair, and jewelry.
You know what? It's totally the rule of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
So if it's early, yeah, she's not in PJs or house clothes.
There are no house clothes.
Right, there are no house clothes. Like, if you go into the living room and you're like, it's early for you to be up, but you're like fully, like, you've been up for an hour doing your hair, like, that's weird.
Yeah, it is.
It's weird. Anyway.
Yeah.
Unless they have completely different biorhythms.
They don't sleep in the same room.
Oh.
I don't think they do. I think you're right.
I think it's like Lucy and Desi, but like
completely different rooms.
Yeah.
Like, she kicks him out of the bed and is like, there's a guest room for your smelly butt.
Goodbye.
I don't want your
beauty rest.
I need my beauty rest. I don't want your man funk on my nice sheets.
Nope. Goodbye.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't think that they sleep in the same room.
Weird. Okay. Anyway, he says he has a migraine and an upset stomach about this deadline for his brand new column for the Seattle Courier.
You feel sorry for him now, don't you?
Yeah. As a migraine, yes.
Yeah.
I totally feel for him.
I know. Remember in last episode how he now has a weekly column with millions of readers?
I do.
This is starting immediately, and he is now, of course, suffering from extreme writer's block.
Aww.
That's what happens when you get a weekly column after having written one column.
Yeah. With no experience.
Yeah.
And then it
turns out it's hard to write the next one.
She pats his arm and tells him he's going to be just fine.
Goodbye.
Helpful
reassurance. He confides that he is suffering from severe self-doubt and panic. What if that article about Luke that the Courier loved was a fluke? What if he's actually not a good writer at all?
Hasn't he been doing this shit for decades?
Yeah. He never thought he'd be back at a high-profile paper ever again, but here he is. She tells him how great that Luke article was by saying, "You made me cry. You not only got in my heart... Oh, wait, sorry. You not only got in my head, but you touched my heart."
Yuck.
And her mouth is barely moving, so I'm wondering if she's had some filler done or maybe some Botox.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like she can't quite move her lips properly.
Yeah.
Or maybe Andy McDowell just hates that line so much. She can't bring herself to enunciate.
Probably. Yeah. Or maybe this is just her serious face.
You touched my heart.
He gives her a winning smile, but as the camera zeroes in on him, you can see that he is still full of doubt and discouragement.
You can see that he's screaming inside.
Mm-hmm. Then Olivia is sitting at home when the phone rings. Jack is calling Olivia from the marina to cancel dinner plans so he can go to Seattle.
Oh, shit.
He says the piece he's writing lacks realism, and he needs to talk to the people he's going to write about.
We used to go roll around in some back alley.
We don't actually know what this column is about, but apparently it needs some Seattle spice.
I mean, I guess if he is actually writing a column about some
people he
it
does
probably makes
to interview
sense,
them.
Yeah, that he should have talked.
But we
to
never
them.
See that. That
no,
actually
of course.
Doesn't ever happen.
No.
Olivia says he doesn't sound so good, but he deflects, saying, "Oh no, never better."
Oh no, poor Jack.
Yeah, we all know not to trust his bravado, right, guys? She says, "It's going to be great. Don't worry."
Click. Mommy's going to go have a glass of Chardonnay now.
Yeah.
Bye.
He accuses her of just saying that to make him feel better, and then she compares herself to George Washington, because she never lies. And then they have flirty banter about having sex later.
Oh my God.
They end with an "I love you," and he gets on the water taxi.
She also has false teeth.
They're made out of wood.
And made out of the teeth of her slaves.
Yeah.
I know. It's disgusting. True story.
You broke me.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to be screaming like this all night. My dog's going to be so freaked out.
I know.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Oh my.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I brought that up.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah.
I am so grossed out.
Yeah.
Like, I can't bring my shoulders down for my ears.
I know, I see you're all scrunched up like a turtle.
Ooh!
Yeah.
That totally changes my view of our founding fathers.
Everything.
No. Oh, wait, no, it doesn't. I didn't know it, but yeah.
But man, what a creepy-ass way to illustrate what we intellectually already knew.
Yeah.
In a really visceral, terrible
yes.
way.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry, Olivia.
Demented.
I didn't mean that you did that.
Oh,
yeah.
Please, no. I mean, she's
yeah, no,
horrible,
she's
but
like
she's
that.
Not like that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Sorry,
oh,
sorry.
Someplace really. I'm
that
sorry.
Like dark.
Sorry,
dark
dear
place.
Listener. That's sort of the sea salt in the caramel to sort of make the rest of the fluffy lightness to add
I
some depth.
I apologize for my screaming howls.
Yeah. Mm. It's okay. You're keeping it real, Auntie Sarah. It's good. So, all right, you guys, we're going to cut to Jack.
All right.
On his laptop in a crowded Seattle restaurant.
Uh-oh.
Guess who walks in?
George Saunders.
That'd be awesome.
And so, no, you guys.
I love George Saunders, but why George Saunders?
Well, I thought about one president, and then I thought about another president, and then I thought about Lincoln and the Bardo.
Oh, did you read that?
No, but it's on my list.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Oh, have you read it?
I have.
Oh, okay.
I love him.
Oh, I want to, yeah, I want to talk to you about that.
So George Saunders walks in today.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Jack is friends with George Saunders.
Totally. You know who else walks in?
Who else?
Jerry.
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
Jerry!
Jerry.
God damn it, Jerry.
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
She says, I know that face. You're totally blocked. And then he grimaces because she gets him.
Yeah.
And you know, and then she's like, you know what you need? You need a drink.
Just about.
Well, yeah.
She says, whenever you got like this back in Philly, you busted out something amazing. She then invites him to come hang out with the editorial staff who've just got a table.
Oh my gosh.
He declines, saying he has work to do. He looks conflicted, you know, like the real reason he doesn't want to go hang out with the editorial staff is that they will be drinking heavily.
Yeah.
This weekly column for the Seattle Courier is testing his sobriety.
Well, we knew that before he even got on the water taxi.
Yeah, it was pretty clear to everyone. He should have moved to a different establishment because as he's trying to write, Jerry comes over with all the people and says, we're bringing the party to you.
Oh,
everyone wants to meet you.
Crowded
restaurant?
Yeah.
What a crazy person this woman is.
Also, everyone has a drink in their hand. He is displeased, but friendly and polite.
No.
Later, Jack and Jerry are recapping the editorial lunch. He comments...
Jack and Jerry.
Is journalism just one big frat party?
It seems like it, right?
Yeah,
like they
it
just
seems
drink?
Like that, right? Yeah, like all they do is drink all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just abuse themselves in all kinds of ways. Like, they don't sleep, they drink coffee all
like
day long.
Chefs.
It's like they're chefs.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the life.
It's the life.
Yeah. He comments that they're nice, and she comments that they're drunk. And then she says, sorry about that, but she's smiling like she's not sorry.
She really
sorry,
isn't.
Sorry, not sorry. She's
crazy, Jerry.
Yeah. He finally says to Jerry, what's your end game with all of this?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
That's a really good
question.
But we
know the answer.
And she replies that Jack is one of the best newspaper men she's ever worked with. He taught her everything she knows.
What?
She's grateful, and she thinks he deserves a better audience than Cedar Cove.
What the shit? No, she just wants to get him drunk and married in Las Vegas again.
I think so.
Hashtag drunk sex.
Yeah.
She's like, end game? I just want to ruin your life.
Yeah.
She's a crazy lady.
She is.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
I know. I love Jerry. He admits he has writer's block and can't fulfill his weekly column. She reminds him that this has happened before and that he locked himself in a room until he was done and won a Peabody that year.
And you know what really helped? Cocaine.
Yeah.
A lot of cocaine.
Yes, right, exactly.
He just needs to believe in himself.
And cocaine.
And cocaine.
And lots of alcohol.
Yeah.
What? She's so
booze
nuts.
And blow.
She might be the most interesting character on this program.
Yeah. What is Jerry's endgame? So that night, Jack is typing away on his laptop at home when the phone rings. It's Olivia. He says that after he came back from Seattle, he got right to work and has been writing all evening. She's like,
how long is this freaking column?
See? Mm. You had nothing to worry about. And he keeps saying, I can handle it all. She offers to bring over takeout, and he says, no, I'll take a rain check. So she gets her worried look on. They exchange goodbyes, and as the camera pans out, we see on the table next to Jack a half-drunk glass of vodka on the rocks.
Holy shit!
And half a bottle.
And...
Okay, because I was going to ask...
And the bottle.
It's vodka, not water.
Well, because you can, because it says vodka. And then he takes a swig of it, just to be sure we all know he is drinking again.
And no, it is the bottle that Jerry sent him.
God
and then he put into the recycle.
We traced the recycle, but he didn't
not
actually...
emptying. Yeah, and we made fun of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he pulled it out.
I did not notice that.
And drank it.
Thank you, Uncle Brian. Yeah. I did not notice that.
I mean, unless he bought the same brand, but...
Maybe that's his brand.
Maybe that's his brand.
Maybe. But I think
but either way.
Probably.
Either way.
She bought him. Yeah.
Jerry, you crazy person.
That's our recap.
Yeah.
So, let's
drinking
do...
Drinking again.
Yeah, let's do five ways that Shelley is going to live her best life now that she's officially dumped Eric.
Oh, flagging. Oh, man, she's going to have so much fun.
I think she's gonna do all those things that Justine was gonna do. She's gonna grow herbs. She's gonna start journaling, meditating.
Yeah.
Getting up early.
Yeah. Going on long nature walks.
With Adele Dead Jordan.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
She's gonna get really organized about her dating profiles.
Oh, that's gonna be so good for her.
Yeah, and she's gonna be really methodical about it. Like one date every 10 days or something like that.
It's
because, you know,
her.
She's focused on her baby and school.
Yeah.
But she is interested in meeting someone better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think she's just really going to start taking care of Shelley.
Yeah.
And maybe she'll refocus on music.
It's That'd true. She nice. Might write an album.
Can you imagine the Melissa Etheridge, awesomeness of that album?
It could be really good.
It will all be about how she used to have this googly-eyed boyfriend. He was stupid.
Yeah.
And now she's
got a beautiful daughter.
Yeah.
Who makes her want to sing every day.
Oh.
It's a miracle.
Up a whole new portal into,
and nature walks.
Yeah.
And all her... And she could write songs about her suitors.
She'll play at some Seattle clubs and be very appreciated at, some acoustic guitar clubs.
Yeah.
Make a little bit of pocket change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Break onto the scene in a sort of... Yeah. Modest way.
I see good things for Shelley.
Me too.
Yeah, she just needed to be rid of Eric, for sure.
Yeah, she had so
Thank
much
God for that gross, silky camisole.
Oh, God. Yeah.
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 Next time on No Helmet Required, we'll be discussing Season 2, Episode 11.
Woo-hoo.
Farewell, listener. We advise you to go through life with a crooked smile and a knowing gaze. Please stay roughly within the law and use your down-home common sense.
Yay!
Please stay roughly within the law and use your down-home common sense.
Yay!